Morning. You guys are actually pretty awake. You know, most of the time I expect Saturday morning to be very blurry. You guys have coffee? I had coffee. So, okay. So, this morning, we're going to look at the idea of healthy and hard relationships. And that is one of the tricks to social interaction. Social is about people, right? And if we talk with people, we have to say the right words at the right time in the right way. Okay, perfect. Yeah, you did remember something. Okay, great. All of your relationships in life are with other people. But they're varied, aren't they? They're not all the same type of relationship. And sometimes that can be based off of physical proximity or time spent together. A stranger that you meet for the first time, you've had very little time to know each other, and so that affects the relationship. Whereas somebody you've known since childhood, and you grew up together, and you get all the same inside jokes, that's a different kind of relationship. Sometimes a relationship is affected by priorities. In the church, you're going to have people who have a lot of the same values as you, and priorities, and then outside, in the world, you're going to have people that you have relationships with that view things very different than you, don't have the same basis to why they live, of believing in God. All of those sorts of things affect it. Sometimes you have family relationships, and that affects things. Like we talked about last night, when you have family, you see everything, right? You can't really hide anything from your family because you're in such close proximity. So they get to see the good, bad, and the ugly. But there is one consistent thing in every single relationship that you have in life. It's you. You're the thing that's consistent. So, when we discuss the idea of social skills, we're really talking about you. Because you have no control over anybody else. You cannot control what the strangers that you meet do or say. You can't even predict any of that. You can't predict how your friends are going to act. We all have friends that come and go, don't we? You may have somebody that for years and years and years you were buddies and everything was great, and then they got caught up in a different crowd than you, or there was some sort of schism, some division between you over a text message, or something like that, and that changes those sorts of things. You don't have really control over anybody else. I mean, I've got several siblings that are younger than me, and I had no say-so in the fact. I'm the oldest. I kind of thought, hey, this is a pretty good gig. But then my parents decided to go along and have other kids. So you don't have any say-so in your family, you know. So you can only ever work on you. And so what we've got to do is realize that. And that's sometimes a hard thing, because if things are not going right in a relationship with another person, we tend to think about all of the things that they did wrong, right? We replay that conversation in our mind. I can't believe they said this. I can't believe they acted that way. How dare they judge me that way? And we think of all the things that they did. But the truth is, people are going to keep on doing that sort of stuff. And you don't get any say-so in it. The only thing you can control in a social relationship is you. And so we've got to take that part really seriously. So, a couple of things this morning to look at. Turn over in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 6. As we go through and we look at these things, I want you to understand that what I'm trying to do is to tell you the same things Jesus says. Because you really shouldn't care what I think about it. I actually am not always very good at social relationships. It's not about me. It's going to be about what the text says. What does Jesus say? And in every sermon or every lesson you ever hear the rest of your life, that's what I want you to do. Don't just take it for the guy's word. He doesn't matter. I want you to open your Bibles. So here in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus is talking, and he says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven. So when you give to the poor, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be honored by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you pray, you're not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners, so that they may be seen by men. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. I'm going to give you an example of this that you probably have seen in the church. When men, this is a personal pet peeve of mine, get up to lead a prayer, we have a tendency to think, if I'm really a godly man, the length of my prayer will be what? Long prayer. But do you know, when you read through your Bible, that most of the public prayers that you see done in the Bible, that are public prayers, not private ones, public ones, are very, very short. And the long prayers that you see in the Bible, the ones that entire Psalms are, they tend to be private. We get it backwards. Why is it that we give long prayers publicly, but then short prayers privately? Jesus says, Matthew 6, why? What's changed? What's the difference between a public and a private prayer? There's really only one thing that's changed. God's still the same, you're still the same, what's different? Just the other people there, right? It's just the audience. You and I can be affected by the people that are around us. And they don't even have to say anything, do they? Just them being there makes us kind of adjust sometimes the way we act. And Jesus has a word for that that we have to take very, very seriously. In Matthew chapter 6, he says, the guy that gives to the poor so that everybody will see him giving to the poor, what kind of a man is he? It's a big, dark, nasty word that he uses in Matthew chapter 6. What is it? Read there in the text. It's open book test. Yes. Hippocratics. Hippocrocodile. He's a hypocrite. Yeah, he's a hypocrite. And that means a pretender. He looks at the other people that are watching and says, I will adjust who I am based off of who is watching me. So if I'm praying publicly, I want everybody to think I'm a very religious person. We can even do this when we're praying silently to ourselves before a meal. You ever done that with other Christians? You sit at a table and everybody kind of bows their head and everybody prays to themselves. And you think, I don't want to be the first one to lift my head up because then I don't look like I prayed long enough. So you wait for maybe somebody else to shuffle around. That's what that's talking about. We've got to be very careful about it. Because the end result of that is you end up not having healthy relationships with people because the hypocrite is the guy who's so worried about everybody else, he doesn't know who he is. A hypocrite, the word literally means an actor. And what does an actor do? You have somebody who, you know, makes millions of dollars as an actor in the Hollywood industry, and what they do all the time is somebody hands them a script and says, this is who you're going to be. And they say, okay, so today I'm a criminal. And then in the next movie, they're the hero. One day they're a drunk in a movie. And the other day, they're helping a drunk in a movie. It just all depends on the script, right? That's what a hypocrite is. And you can't have real healthy relationships with other people if you're always looking for them to give you the script of who you're going to be. So Jesus warns, if you want to be right with God, you have to decide who you are, and then let people just see that person. And when you are just who you are, the reality will be is that some people will like that and some people won't. That's why we change, isn't it? Because how many of us want people to like us? How many of you woke up this morning and said, I don't care what anybody thinks, and if everybody hates me, I'd be fine with that? We all, you woke up this morning, you are a better person than I am. I mean, the truth of the matter is I'd like to get there, but I'm not there yet. I like it when I'm liked. I like it when you laugh at my jokes. It makes me sad when you don't. The reality is that most of us don't have that level of self-confidence. So we want to work on that. Because who you are, if it becomes consistent, that actually makes you better at dealing with other people. And part of that is because they'll then know what they're getting. One of the reasons that it's important to know who you are is, if you don't know who you are, when you're dealing with people who don't like you, you'll stop making good choices. Turn over to Matthew chapter 21. Matthew 21 and verse 23. Jesus had a group of people that were his enemies. And that was the chief priests and the elders, the religious leaders. And in Matthew chapter 21, Jesus has an altercation with them. It says, when he entered the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came to him while he was teaching, and they said, by what authority are you doing these things, and who gave you this authority? So they come up to Jesus and say, who said you could say these things? And Jesus said to them, I will also ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I will also tell you by what authority I do these things. The baptism of John was from what source? From heaven or from men? So Jesus asked a real simple question of him. He says, I'll tell you what, I'll answer your question. You just answer one question for me. John the Baptist, did God send him, or was he just a false teacher that came from men? That's a yes or no question, right? There's only two options. And look at what they began to do. It says they began reasoning among themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say to us, then why did you not believe him? But if we say from men, we fear the people, for they all regard John as a prophet. And answering Jesus, they said, we do not know. He also said to them, neither will I tell you by what authority I do these things. You notice what happened with these religious leaders? Jesus asked them a simple question, and the first thing they started thinking about is, what's the consequence of which answer I choose? And that's the wrong way to think, isn't it? There's a right answer and there's a wrong answer. And we can't think about the consequences of the right answer or the wrong answer. Otherwise, we go through life just letting what everybody else thinks dictate how we do things. Any of you guys ever had your parent ask you a question, did you do that? Or, what do you think about this? And you think, what do I need to tell them just to stay out of trouble? Ever had that feeling? What's the right answer? If I answer it this way, Dad will. And so we think about the other person. And the truth is, if we are genuine people, we should just be able to answer the truth. And if we're confident in who we are, and we're not worried about what everybody else thinks about us, then it takes a big burden off. Somebody asks you, you believe in God? You don't have to think, well, if I say yes, they will. But if I say no, or you don't have to worry about that. You just simply can be you. So if you don't know who you are, your enemies will stop you because you're too afraid of the consequences. If you don't know who you are, you'll end up having shallow relationships with other people. Turn over to Proverbs. Look at Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs is a book that all it is short little sayings of wisdom. And, like we talked about last night, it takes wisdom to talk with people. Proverbs 27, down verse 6, it says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. If you are a real friend, and you see another person, your friend, making choices that are hurting them, what will you do? If you're a real friend, you have a friend who's starting to get mixed up in the wrong crowd, what do you do? If you're a real friend, if you really care about it, what do you do? Don't know? Just quiet? Half asleep? What do you do? What should you do? Help them out. You should say something, right? But you know the moment you tell somebody that what they're doing has you worried and you think they're making the wrong choices, you know that's probably going to wound them because nobody likes to be told they're wrong. But if you're a real friend, you will say something. And the other thing is that if we want real friends, we have to be open to them saying those sorts of things to us too. But that's also hard. So if you spend your whole life being too concerned about what everybody else thinks of you, you never really get close to anybody. Because the whole time, you're thinking, but if they find out who I really am, that'll hurt. And that happens sometimes. And it's particularly easy to happen with all of the levels of communication that you guys have. I know Facebook is not as popular as it once was. Now it's all Instagram and Snapchat, right? Yeah, that's the big one now. But if you have a friend on Facebook, is a Facebook friend the same as a friend? No, not necessarily, right? I have friends who are also Facebook friends, but I have Facebook friends who I go, when did I meet them? Apparently they're getting married. Okay. It's not the same. It's a very shallow relationship. But it feels real. Because, look, you can quantify it with Facebook, can't you? You can quantify and say, look at how many friends I have. And then, you know, I can even compare to my other friends. I have more friends than them. But it's not real, is it? It's very shallow. Very shallow relationships that we have over social media. And it makes it very easy for you to never get really close to people. So your social interactions with people never get very good. We never get very good at conflict. We never get very good at dealing with when somebody disagrees with us. We never get very good at telling somebody we disagree with them in a loving way. Because it's much easier to just kind of keep everybody at a distance. And that is a risk that you deal with, I think, more than any other generation has ever had. You can go through life with just very shallow relationships with people. But it's not healthy. And you don't make any real impact with people. And then they never really make an impact with you. And that's where you have that feeling. You ever had that feeling where you're alone in a crowd? Tons of people around, but you don't feel close to anybody? I'm afraid that's exactly what's happening to most of your peers in the culture today. Is everybody's feeling very alone in a crowd. There's plenty of communication, but nothing of any substance to it. And that happens because we don't know who we are, and we're afraid of conflict. We're afraid of being found out. We're afraid of any sort of confrontation. You know, if you're afraid of confrontation, then strangers stay strangers. Look over in Matthew chapter 10. Matthew 10, down in verse 26, it says, therefore do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed. This is Jesus speaking to his apostles, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light. What you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Christianity, whether you are a Christian now or hopefully considering it and will be someday, let me let you know a secret. Christians have to have conflict. We have to be good at it. Because that's what it means to be a light in the world and a salt of the earth. If there's a world of people who are out there lost, and you want them to be saved, at some point, you're going to have to tell them about their condition. You're going to have to say, what you're doing and how you're living is wrong. And you can say it in a nice way, you can be friendly, you can be kind, you can be loving. In fact, you should be all of those things. But at the end of the day, you're still going to be telling them you're wrong. And if we're not good at conflict, you will always keep people distant. I'm convinced it's one of the reasons evangelism has not really been super successful in churches lately. I don't know whether any of you have noticed, but you hear stories of the church 50 years ago and there'd be people baptized all the time. You don't see that so much anymore, do you? Part of that is the culture. Part of that is us, too. It's hard to convert people that you won't ever talk to. It's hard to make friends because every friend starts out as a stranger. If you're not willing to engage with people you don't know. And so we've got to have enough confidence in who we are that we're willing to talk to people who don't know us. And the reality is most of the time you won't go up and talk to somebody that you don't know very well because there is a fear that they won't like you. Or there's a fear that you'll look stupid. Or there's a fear that you'll stick your foot in your mouth. And we have these fears, and so it keeps us at a distance. But all of those fears are fears about how will people view me. We've got to have enough confidence in who we are that so what if they don't like me? You know, sometimes you're going to try and introduce or be nice to somebody, and they're just not going to be having any of it. But does that make you a bad person just because somebody snubs you? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. That's on them. But you got to have enough confidence in who you are to know that deep down. The other thing that happens is we try and keep everybody happy. But you know, that's another way of just being a hypocrite. Isn't that what the Matthew 6 is talking about? Jesus says you've got these people out there and they care about what everybody else thinks of them and they're just trying to keep everybody happy so they look good and everything's good. But the problem is if I spend my whole life trying to keep everybody happy, I'm really useless. Because all I'm doing is keeping the status quo. You look over in Galatians 2. Paul talked about that particular issue. In Galatians chapter 2, down verse 11, he says, "But when Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned." That Cephas is another name for Peter. "For prior to the coming of certain men from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, he began to withdraw and hold himself aloof, fearing the party of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews joined him in," there's that word again, "hypocrisy," with the result that even Barnabas was carried away by their hypocrisy. Paul got upset with the apostle Peter one time because Peter would eat with the Gentiles. Now, Gentiles are just, that's a fancy way of saying people who aren't Jews. He would spend time with the Christians that weren't Jewish until the Jewish people came into town, and then he'd act like he didn't know them. Have you ever met somebody who's that way? Remember my wife, when she was younger herself, she went to a camp one time with a friend, and the friend said, "Yeah, we're going to go, and we're going to be buddies, and we're going to do all these things together." They got out of the car, the parents drove away, and the friend turned to my wife and said, "See ya," and went off to go and hang out with boys. It totally changed once the environment changed. Well, that's what Peter was doing. And in the end, it made Peter useless with the Gentiles, because how do you feel when somebody snubs you once a different crowd comes around? Oh, you're all buddies, and then the cool kids walk up, and all of a sudden, I don't even know you anymore. You know how you feel. So Peter was useless with the Gentiles, but he was also useless with the Jews, who needed to start being nicer to the Gentiles. But Peter was useless with them because he didn't show them a different way. And we always try to make people happy. In the end, what we become is people who don't help anybody become better people. So you've got to know who you are enough to be the same you regardless. If you're one person Sunday morning, and you know all the right things to say when you're in the church building, but then you go to school and you're a different person, there's no benefit to you, there's no benefit to the people that you go to school with, and there's no benefit to the church, because someday it will also come out. And how do you feel when you find out about somebody in the church that you thought was one way but actually was another? The other thing is, if you don't know who you are, you take every conflict and disagreement personally. It's always about you. When the reality is that it isn't always about you. Sometimes people are mean to you. You know why? Because they had a bad day. You ever been mean to somebody because you had a bad day? I've been mean to people because I woke up on the wrong side of the bed and had a crick in my neck. Sometimes it isn't about you. The other thing that ends up happening is you become this tragic hero in your whole life. The funny thing is if you don't know who you are, you become this person who it's all about you. Because in the end, it's, if I act like this, they don't treat me right. If I act like that, they don't treat me right. And you're always concerned about what everybody else thinks about you. And the reality is if you pin your hopes and dreams on what everybody else thinks of you, you will always be what? It's not going to be successful, is it? If you care what everybody else thinks of you, will they always love you? Will always be rainbows and butterflies? There are going to be times where you're very disappointed. And then you'll say, oh, woe is me. Nobody likes me. And your whole life will center around being a victim. And then we go around complaining about how everybody else treats us. And we've all met people like that, right? People who everything, they're always talking about what everybody else is saying about them. If you want to be more at peace with your life, you've got to step back and say, I know who I am. I am a Christian. And I have some certain standards of right and wrong because I am a Christian and I follow the Bible. And sometimes that means people will love me for it. Because doing the right thing, some people will love you for it. But it also means that sometimes people will not like me for it and it will make me unpopular. There will be certain things that people want me to do that I can't do. And I'm okay with that. Because if I know who I am and I act that way, I will end up drawing the right kind of people to me who I know are my real friends, and it will repel people who are not my real friends and are just my Facebook friends. And you will know the difference. Second thing that you need to know about this, and don't worry, that first point's a really long one. If you're thinking, oh no, he's going to be speaking forever, that's the really long one. The second thing I want you to see about social skills is that healthy growth relationships are found in diverse people unified with God. The key to having a happy social life is not to surround yourself with people who think exactly like you. Now, there's a guy in the Old Testament, a king, who did that. His name was Rehoboam. His dad was Solomon, and then Rehoboam became king. And Rehoboam was asked by the nation, we would love for you to be king, we will support you, but please lower our taxes. Solomon was a real high tax guy. Solomon had built the temple, he made the city very extravagant, and that cost a lot of money. And so he said, just lower our taxes. And Rehoboam went to the wise counselors, the older men. As a young king, he went to the older men that had served his father, and they said, do it. Listen to the people, lower their taxes, and they'll love you. But then he went to his buddies, who all thought exactly like him, and they gave him the advice, oh, don't you listen to those people. You show them how strong you are. You tell them you're going to raise their taxes. So he surrounded himself with these other people who were exactly like him, and they told him exactly what he wanted to hear. And then he went up, told the people he was going to raise the taxes, and you know what happened? Civil war. 10 of the tribes left, and only 2 stayed with him. Healthy relationships are not about being around people who are exactly like you, but it's about being around people who have the same values as you. In the church, that's one of the beautiful things, is that the church is full of people who are very different than us. Some young, some old. Some that have a working blue-collar background, some that have a white-collar background. Some that have lots of money, some that have very little money. Some that know what it's like to have health problems, some that have never had health problems a day in their life. Some that have a variety of sin and baggage that they brought. Some that have never faced those sorts of things. all of that diversity of talents and skills and backgrounds and everything can make the church a really wonderful, strong place. Paul compares the church to a body. And he says, well, you look at your body and every part has its own function, right? Everything's a little bit different. Realize that God always meant for you to surround yourself with people who have the right kind of values. Your close inner circle of friends in particular should be people who have the same values of you as you. They love God, they want to do what's right, but they shouldn't be people who are exactly like you. Think about the apostles and the makeup of the apostles. First of all, we had two sets of the apostles that were brothers. Have you ever had a fight with your brother? The reality is that siblings do not always agree. In the apostleship, we're sibling sets. On top of that, there were two guys. There was Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector. Now, a tax collector is a guy that works for the government, right? He's a guy who works for the government, collects taxes for the, in this case, the Roman government. Simon the Zealot, a zealot was a particular group of people that we would call terrorists today. Zealots were people who believed that the Roman government was awful. And they said the only way we can get out of this is to fight them back physically. So they would go out and fight with swords and burn things down and destroy public property. Now, Matthew was a guy who came from a background of supporting the government. And Simon, the zealot, came from a background of trying to destroy the government. A little different, right? And yet, God put them together because they both agreed that Jesus was the Christ, and that was enough, wasn't it? They could start there and work out the other differences. And they could learn from each other. God designs it this way, to put us together with people that are different than us. You have the apostles had fishermen, just common everyday guys who got up in the morning, they go out fishing, they fish typically all night, come back. Hard physical labor. And then you have someone like the apostle Paul, who is a scholar. This is a bookworm. He's a geek. Everything about him was book knowledge and academia and all these things. And they got together and they worked together. They were very effective together. Judeans and Galileans. This is the difference between a Judean and a Galilean. If you look at a map of Israel, Judea is down low and Galilee's up high. Galilee were considered like rednecks. If you were from Galilee, you were a redneck. Judea was considered the intellectual elite, the upper class. They had a lot more money. It's a very different culture. It's kind of like what you see, the difference between people who live in L.A. and people who live in Texas. A little bit of a difference between them and how they live and how they think and how they talk. Well, that was the same with Judeans and Galileans. Jesus even had then an inner circle. Amongst the apostles, he had a specific group that he was particularly close with. Peter, James, and John. Remember when Jesus went off to pray? He asked Peter, James, and John, you come with me. When he went up to the Mount of Transfiguration, he says, you guys come with me. So there was this particular three that had a little bit of a different relationship with Jesus. And then throw in that mix, there was one guy who was a total flat-out traitor. Now that's the makeup of the apostles. And Jesus picked them all by hand. Do you notice when Jesus decided to pick his friends, the people he was going to work with, he picked people who were all very, very different, but each had something to offer. I want you to do the same thing. Look in the church and find people who are different than you and then become their friends. Because you will learn something. If you as young people will find friendships with older people, most congregations have at least one or two older people that are either homebound or can't get out very often. I dare you, go and visit them. One, you will make their month if you do that. And two, I can guarantee you will learn something. Aside from my spouse, my closest friend in the whole wide world is 85 years old. And he is dying. And I have learned so much. Because he's seen it. And I haven't. And these sorts of things, the only way that you get better at life is to surround yourself with people who are different than you, but have the same values. And then you can see it from their perspective, and it makes you a better thinker, a better liver, better to see things from other people's perspective. Next thing I want you to realize, conflict won't kill you. There is nothing wrong with disagreeing with people. That is not the end of the world. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus told his apostles to go into different cities and preach the gospel. And what were they supposed to do when people didn't listen? He says, you go in pairs, and if they won't listen to you, he says, you just leave the city and you shake the dust off your feet. If you start to talk to somebody about God, and they don't want to have anything to hear about it, and they think you're dumb, guess what happens to you when they disagree with you? Nothing. Nothing happens. What happens to you if somebody doesn't like you? Nothing. There's nothing. If somebody calls you bad names and wags their finger at you, nothing. You just shake the dust off your feet and you move on. That's a skill. And you know how you get that skill? By having people do that kind of stuff to you. If everybody likes you and you never have anybody who doesn't like you, you're not doing your job. You've got to disagree with some people sometimes. Next time you're in a group of friends at school and somebody says something that you know is wrong, I dare you to tell them, I see that differently. You don't have to point your finger out and say, stupid! I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, just tell them, I see that differently. And if you'd like to talk about it, I'd be happy to. See what happens. I'll tell you the one thing that won't happen. You will not die. But that's the fear, isn't it? If I stand out, it's just that social pressure to conform is so strong. It's terrifying. And that doesn't go away when you stop being a teenager, by the way. It's always there. You go to the workplace and your coworkers say something that you disagree with and you stand out against them. Now all of a sudden the fear changes from they might not like me, the fear now begins to change to I might lose my job because of it. It never goes away. But I will tell you, you can get better at it now, so it's not a big deal. The Bible tells us to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Be smart about it. Like I said, you don't have to point your finger at them and tell them, you're wrong! You can do it in love, you can do it kind of, but still, you can still say, I see that differently. Be happy to talk to you about it if you're interested. And see what happens. The reality is most people won't take you up on it, but every once in a while you will. Because people are interested when they see something different. The other thing to realize is that if people don't like you, you're probably doing something right. Because when Jesus walked on this earth, what did people think of him? They called him Beelzebub, the Lord of the Flies. And the next thing I want you to realize is part of being comfortable with who you are is knowing you can't do everything. And that's okay too. One of the things that we tend to do is we look at other people and their talents and their abilities and we go, if I was like that, I could. I do that with other preachers all the time. I hear other preachers speak and I think, man, if I could only talk like him. But the reality is I can only talk like me. I can only think like me. And I can only do what I can do. And that's true for you too. That's going to be true your whole life. God doesn't call you to be somebody else's Christian. He just calls you to be you. And do the best with what you've got. In Romans chapter 12, verses 3 through 5, it says, by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, that is, think clearly, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. For as in one body we have many members, and members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Everybody's different. And that means you too. We're all weird together. So be okay with that. And part of that is just realizing, when you see somebody else do something that you aren't very good at, learn to say to yourself, that is really cool that they're great at that. I have talents over in this area. Because for everything with other people that you're looking at, how they have different gifts and talents, do you know what they're doing when they look at you? Exact same thing. We're all walking around in this world looking at everybody else going, wow, if I were like them. Be you. You are fearfully and wonderfully made exactly the way you are. And you have things to offer just the way you are. So don't try and be everybody else. You just do what you can with what you've got. Because what you have and who you are is good enough. It really is. And I wish I had learned that earlier. Because I could have done a whole lot more good if I had stopped trying to be everybody else. Because the way God makes you is very effective at being you. There's nobody else with your particular mix of abilities. There's nobody else who lives in this world at the particular time and the particular place with the particular influence that you have. You are unique. There's only one of you. So be the best you can. And let everybody else be the best them. It's not a competition. After all, there's only one person who did it right. He's in heaven, wanting you to join him by just being the best you can be and trusting him. So in all things, I'm just going to wrap it up here, right about here. In all the things that you participate in life, in all the relationships, the number one thing is, you've got to ask yourself, do I know who I am? And so what I want you to do is begin to think about that. Who are you? If you had to define yourself in 3 or 4 sentences, how would you do it? What would you tell everybody else you are? And are you comfortable with everybody seeing that? Because until we get to that point where we're not worried so much about what everybody else thinks, we can't be effective with everybody else because we're too busy trying to hide. So just think about who you are, decide who you're going to be, and set your priorities there. And then every other relationship becomes affected by that. It always starts with you because you're the only one that you can do anything about. Thanks so much for the time this morning. Pass it over. I think we've got about 15 minutes or so, or here's the schedule guy here. He's coming up.